Hi, it's Jim Rickards, and this is a special video YouTube political update for our readers and subscribers. Glad to be with you. I'm going to talk about the state of the presidential campaign. We just finished the Republican National Convention. Of course, we're still kind of in the aftermath of the assassination attempt last Saturday. Thank God Trump survived, and our prayers are with the Cory Compratore, who was killed, innocent bystander, and then two others badly wounded. So we're thinking about them and their families, and of course Trump's family. It's amazing to think that Trump was shot on a Saturday and gave his acceptance speech at the convention on a Thursday, just a matter of 4 days. Really a testament to Trump's heroism and his strength, physical and mental. For anyone who's ever been through a really traumatic experience, I was getting shot in the head qualifies. But, you know, if you've been in combat, serious accident, traumatic brain injury, there are a lot of things, could be an emotional or other trauma. You can get through it. You'd be OK, but you don't come out the same. It changes you. It can be for the better, actually. Maybe in Trump's case, a little more sober, a little more reflective, a little more philosophical. Those are good things. It comes with age and comes with experience. And certainly, getting shot in the head is quite an experience. Post-traumatic stress syndrome is real. It can hit you in days. It can hit you a year later. That's the other thing. It can be a little bit of a time bomb. But Trump seems to have, well, not seems. He clearly has come through it okay. But I would say it's a different Trump, but maybe in some ways a better Trump. Like I say, a little more reflective and more. He was talking about love and unity. Those are good themes in his speech at the Republican National Convention. So I don't want to dwell on the assassination and the assassination attempt in the sense that there's a lot to say about that. This was, you know, there was bravery by the Secret Service agents who jumped on Trump and acted as a body shield in the immediate aftermath of the shooting and got him off the stage. Some things to criticize about the, looks like the B team, but you know, but I won't take away from the fact that they were brave and put themselves in harm's way to protect Trump. But as far as the leadership and the organizer and a lot else that went on in terms of security perimeter, you've heard a lot about this. I don't need to spend a lot of time on it. In fact, I'm not going to. But that story is not going away. Trump's through it, but the investigation of the Secret Service, the head of the Secret Service, Kimberly Cheadle, the gross negligence at best, or maybe even passive participation. It's almost as if the Secret Service opened up ways to shoot Trump. And I'm not saying they participated in it, but passively they sort of did, made it easy for, there's enough nut jobs out there and AR-15s are not that hard to get. And so as long as if they opened the door for an assassin, even if they didn't pull the trigger themselves. You'll be hearing a lot more about that. That's not what I want to cover on this recording today. I want to get back to the race, but I just thought those were all some highlights worth mentioning. So where does the race stand? Right now, it's Trump, and the Trump-Vance ticket is theirs to lose. And what that means is that they're way ahead. If you had to call it now, or if the election were held today, Trump and Vance would win. They would win pretty decisively. I just want to kind of run down some of the recent polling results. In a national poll, and kind of national polls don't matter because we don't have national elections. It goes state by state, and you add up the electoral votes. That's how the system works. But people like the horse race in a two-way race, Biden versus Trump. I'll come back to whether it's even going to be Biden. That's really the big story right now. Trump's ahead by 2.5 percentage points, which is huge. I mean, it's just outside the margin of error, but Trump's always been behind. 2016, 2020, he's always behind in these national polls, even though he won in 2016, but he's ahead in a two-way race. Now, if we open up to a five-way race, which is what it's going to be, because RFK Jr., Jill Stein, Cornel West are all going to play a role. They might only take 1 or 2% each, maybe a little more for RFK Jr., but it could add up to 10% or more. And then you have to ask yourself, where are those 10% coming from? Are they coming from Trump, or are they coming from Biden or the Democrats? But in a five-way race, Trump's ahead by 3.6 percentage points. That's a lot. Right now, I My forecast would be what I expect is that this will be an electoral college landslide for Trump. Trump needs 270 electoral votes to win. Anyone running for president, you need 270 electoral votes to win. What is Trump's path to 270? How does he get there? Well, the simplest way to understand it, Trump keeps all the states he got in 2020, and that seems highly likely. Those are solid Trump states: Alabama, Mississippi, Texas, Florida, others. So he keeps all the states he got in 2020. He picks up Arizona and Georgia. They went for Biden in 2020. But right now, just to give you an update, Trump's ahead in Arizona by 5.7 points, 5.7 percentage points. And he's ahead in Georgia by 3.9 percentage points. Those are recent polls, but they're trending his way. So, call it the 6% and 4% kind of round numbers. Those are big leads. And I would expect them to get bigger as we move closer to election day. Things are really going Trump's way. So it looks like he'll pick up Georgia and Arizona, which he needs. If he does that, if he keeps all the 2020 states, gets Georgia and Arizona, then of the three remaining battleground states, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, Trump only needs one of those. So if he keeps 2020, gets Georgia and Arizona, which he's on track to do, he only needs to get one out of Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. And just to give you the latest polls there, Trump's ahead in Pennsylvania by 4.5 points, ahead in Wisconsin by 3 points. And ahead in Michigan by just a little over 3 points. Again, these are big leads outside the margin of error, getting bigger. Trump doesn't have to win all three. He only has to win one out of the three. He's on track to do that, and Pennsylvania looks particularly good right now. Just to take what I said and turn it around, what's Biden's path to victory? Well, if Trump keeps his 2020 states and takes Georgia and Arizona, Biden has to run the table. He has to take Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, all three of them. He has to run the table for him to get to 270. So, as I say, Trump only has to take one. But it gets more interesting based on a recent point. One thing that Trump has done very well, he's expanded the battle space. So he's taken, there was like a list of seven battleground states. Most of the states, we know what's going to happen. California will go for Biden. Florida will go for Trump. New York will go for Biden. Texas will go for Trump. We know those. It's the swing states or the battleground states that where the election will be decided. And there were seven states that everyone had as swing states. They were North Carolina, Arizona, Nevada, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Georgia. They were the seven battleground states. What Trump has done, he's added to that list. All of a sudden, Virginia is now tied. Virginia was pretty solidly Biden. It's now tied. Biden has a lead in New Hampshire, but only 3 points, which is really skinny. Has a lead in Minnesota, but only by 3 points. Even New Jersey, most people are like, New Jersey, what are you talking about? You crazy? That's solidly blue. Don't be so sure. The New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez just got convicted of bribery. There was a truck driver from South Jersey who came almost within recount distance of beating the governor in the last governorship election. Biden's ahead by 7 points in New Jersey, but the fact that Biden only has a single digit lead, 7 points and declining in a state that's solidly blue as New Jersey shows you that they're in serious trouble. Now, the significance of this is twofold. Number one, if Virginia's tied, if Trump takes Virginia, he doesn't need Pennsylvania. I said Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, he only needs one. Pennsylvania looks like the best shot, but if Trump takes Virginia, he doesn't need Pennsylvania. He doesn't even have to win that. He's obviously out to win it and probably will. But the opposite is if Trump takes Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, let's say Trump runs the table and takes Virginia and maybe picks up Minnesota and New Hampshire, one or two others, you're looking at a landslide. You're looking at that would be something like 330 electoral votes to 208 for Biden. Again, 270 to win, but Trump could get 330 with what I just described, Biden 208. That's a crush. I mean, it's not quite as big as Ronald Reagan in 1984, Richard Nixon in 1972, but historically, that is an electoral college landslide. So we're kind of heading that way, but we're almost certainly heading for a Trump victory. Biden's approval rating right now is around 40%, 40% on a good day, 38% on a bad day. No incumbent president with an approval rating that low has ever won re-election. Biden's lower than anybody, including Jimmy Carter in 1980. But no incumbent running for re-election with a rating that low has ever won. So that's another strike against Biden. There's a lot more data, but it all favors Trump. So right now, this is, as we say in sports, this is Trump's to lose, meaning Trump's on track to win. Anything can happen. Politics is nutty. He could screw it up, but I don't think he will. I think the trends going his way are going to continue to go in his way, continue to go his way. It's his to lose. I would fully expect him to win as of now. So what's going on the Democrat side? Biden, Kamala Harris. The answer is a lot, but a lot of uncertainty as well. Now, I kind of have predictive models. I make predictions. It's what we do all the time. It's what we do in our newsletters and videos like this and so forth. And we have very, very rigorous methodology. I'm not shy about doing it, but there are some times when you just have to say, you know what, we don't know. Like that's the best information, the best intelligence is this could go either way. And so I'm going to describe the contending forces in the Democratic Party, with the caveat that it's impossible to predict because the principals don't know. If the principals know, and our job is to figure it out, crack the code, do the analysis, and tell you, that's one thing. And that's what we do. But when the principals themselves don't know, then there's nothing to decode. It's just, you just have to understand that and understand that's how it looks right now. So I would analogize the Democrat situation to two scorpions in a bottle. A scorpion can sting and kill the other scorpion, but the victim has enough strength to sting the other one, and they both die. So that's how we describe that's the metaphor for nuclear war fighting, by the way, mutual assured destruction. But the Democrats are kind of in that mode right now. So who are the two scorpions? Well, Biden himself lacks agency. Agency is it's a psychological term, behavioral term, sometimes an economic term, but it basically means decision-making ability. You can decide if you want to go shopping today or, make an investment or go to a ball game, do whatever you want. You have agency. Biden does not. His mind is so far gone. His dementia is so far advanced. If Biden were not the president, someone in his family would have gone to court and had a guardian, a court-approved guardian appointed. Biden can't write a check. He can't sign a contract. He can't drive a car. He can't make any important decisions. I mean, I know he's president, but yeah, which is a little scary. But that's where Biden is. His family's, this is a kind of elder abuse. They're not really looking out for him. They're looking out for themselves. But Biden is encased right now. There's what I call the Gang of Eight who have surrounded Biden. You can't get to Biden unless you go through the Gang of Eight. And they're not letting very many people in at the moment. They're the ones calling the shots. The Gang of Eight is determined that Biden stay in the race. They want him to run. They think he can win, whether he lasts 4 years. They don't care. They don't care about the country. They just want to hang on to power. And so who's in the Gang of Eight? Well, Jill Biden, president's wife, I call her Taco Jill. Jill Biden, Hunter Biden, Valerie Biden Owens, that's Joe Biden's sister. Valerie Biden. She's kind of the brains behind the Biden crime family, by the way. Very, very smart, very powerful. So she's in that inner circle that we're talking about. You would expand it to include Mike Donilon, political advisor, the brother of Tom Donilon, who is Obama's national security advisor. So there's a little vector into the Obama camp. Steve Ricchetti, who's one of Joe Biden's longtime advisors, highly trusted. Bruce Reed. Bruce Reed is an old hand. He was in the Clinton administration, a top political advisor to the Clintons. He's in this inner circle. So I guess the Clintons have a little in there. Two others, less well-known, Anthony Bernal and Annie Tomasini. Anthony Bernal and Annie Tomasini, who are they? They are Jill Biden's top staffers, not Joe Biden, but Jill Biden. And they're kind of radical, hardcore Bidenites. So when you think about it, when you take Jill, Hunter, Valerie, and add Anthony and Annie Tomasini, who are like family members because they advise Jill, five of the eight are like they're the inner circle, and then add Bruce Reed, Steve Ricchetti, and Mike Donilon. So that's the Gang of Eight. They've encased Biden. On the other hand, there is another group called the Super Friends. Who are the Super Friends? It's Hakeem Jeffries, who's the minority leader in the House, Chuck Schumer, who's the majority leader in the Senate, Nancy Pelosi, who's like the godfather, pulling all the strings, working the phones, very powerful behind the scenes, and Barack Obama. So these are the super friends in the sense that these are people who are powerful Democrats who can get to see the president, but they're on the other side of the struggle. The Gang of Eight want to keep Biden's super friends, as I've described them. Want Biden to step aside. Your time has come and gone. You can leave with your head held high. Here's your off ramp, but you have to withdraw from the race. There was, if you talked about this a month ago, you would say, "Well, if Biden withdraws, who's going to replace him?" And everyone had the list. It was Gavin Newsom, Gretchen Whitmer, Jay Pritzker, Gina Raimondo, Jennifer Granholm. We sort of knew who was on that list. That's over. Now it's Kamala Harris. They've converged on that. Like, hey, we're going to get rid of, first rule in Washington, you can't be something with nothing. Well, if you want to get rid of Biden, you need something, someone to be the presidential nominee, and it's going to be Kamala Harris. So now, again, two scorpions in the body. You got the Gang of Eight trying to push Biden over the finish line, and you've got the super friends trying to throw him under the bus and bring in Kamala Harris. This is coming down to a matter of days. One of my metaphors is the shootout at the OK Corral in 1881. The bad guys there were a gang of brothers, the Clanton and the McLaurie brothers. On the one hand, they were the bad guys. The good guys were the Earp brothers, White Earp, Virgil Earp, Morgan Earp, and Doc Holliday. And they had this famous shootout, and the good guys won. But it was pretty gnarly for a while. That's kind of what's going on here. This is a shootout between the Gang of Eight and the Super Friends. It's going to come down to a matter of days, and here's why. As if this scenario wasn't complicated enough, there's another twist, which is the following. The Democratic National Convention is scheduled for August 19th. That's when they're going to have it in Chicago. By the way, they're expecting over 100,000 pro-terrorist, pro-Hamas protesters and Antifa, BLM. They might be around, but these pro-terrorists, pro-Hamas group, they're going to be there in force. I expect, don't hope for it. I hope we can avoid it, but violence in the streets, tear gas beatings, all that could very well happen and could even start to resemble or be worse than the 1968 Democratic Convention in Chicago. That was when the anti-war protesters were there and others, and Richard Daley was the mayor and sent the Chicago police into the park, and they beat the protesters with the billy clubs and tear gas and a lot else. And Hubert Humphrey got the nomination through a cloud of tear gas and lost the election. Excuse me. Okay, we'll see what happens then. But the Democrats are not waiting for their own convention. They want to get the nomination over now or as soon as possible. And the way they're doing that, it's kind of crazy, but just to do a quick backstory, the state of Ohio had a law saying you have to have your nominee by August 7th in order to be on the ballot on November 5th. I don't know who the genius was who decided to have the Democratic convention on August 19th after the Ohio deadline, but they did. But the Democrats just supposed or assumed that, well, don't worry, Ohio will extend the deadline. Well, Ohio didn't extend the deadline. It has the Republican legislature and a Republican governor, and they say, why should we do you any favors? So the Democrats cooked up this crazy idea of having a Zoom convention or a roll call. So we know who all the delegates are. There's thousands of them, and 95 plus percent of them are pledged to Biden. So they said, let's just have a Zoom, a virtual digital roll call. I'm sure there's some credentials or passwords or whatever required, and nominate Biden by the end of July. No, it's now, basically, and not wait for the convention, which means the convention would just be for show. They're kind of a big, I've been to conventions. They're kind of a big party anyway, but you wouldn't even have a real nomination in Chicago in August 19th. The nomination would be over in a matter of days. This was scheduled, this virtual roll call I'm talking about was scheduled for July 21st, which is Sunday. By the way, I'm recording this on Friday, around noon. Things are changing very quickly. Hopefully you'll see it Friday or over the weekend, but I'm not offering any guarantees that things won't change by Monday. We'll talk a little bit more about that. But this would have started on Sunday, July 21st, going for 5 days to July 26th, and then it would be over. Biden would win clearly, And he would be the nominee, and there would be nothing else to talk about. And the convention would just be a sideshow with violence on the streets. This was ostensibly done because of this Ohio issue, which I described. Ohio did ultimately move the deadline back to September, but the Democrats went ahead with this plan anyway, because now there's a different calculus, which is they got to get Biden over the finish line before the super friends and Kamala Harris throw him under the bus. So this again, this is, comes back to this gunfight, the OK Corral analogy that I described a little bit earlier. So the big development just in the past day or two, somebody asked me the other day if Biden was going to be the nominee. I said, "What time is it?" And what I meant was this story changes five times a day, so you got to kind of check your watch, see what's going on. But just in the last 24 hours or so, the Democratic National Committee Rules Committee pushed the virtual convention back from July 21st to August 1st. Now, that's bad news for Biden, because, by the way, you say, well, don't they have rules? Yeah, every rule book I've ever read, and I've read a lot of them as a regulatory lawyer for decades, you know, New York Stock Exchange, Chicago Mercantile Exchange, whatever. Whenever you read these rule books, there's always a rule that says we can change the rules. So this kind of rule book, if everything's going fine, but if the board wants to change the rules, they can. So you don't really know unless you're on the board. So the DNC pushed this thing back to August 1st through August 6th. So again, another 5-day window, but pushed it back 10 days. Why? To give the super friends more time to throw Biden under the bus. This is bad news for Biden. So the Gang of Eight still likes the idea of the virtual convention, so you don't have to wait till the 3rd week of August. But the super friends like the idea of pushing it back 10 days to give them more time to throw Biden under the bus. So this is, like I said, this is a death struggle between these two groups. So where do things stand right now? By the way, there are big stories yesterday, Thursday night, and some again today. I'm recording this on Friday. That said, Biden has, in effect, made the decision to withdraw from the race. It'll happen over the weekend. We'll learn on Sunday or Monday that he's out of the race. And maybe that will happen. I'm not ruling it out. But what I'm saying is, I know some of the reporter. I know Mike Allen very well. He's the top reporter for Axios. They broke the story. There was a leak to the Washington Post, et cetera. Pardon me, I read the stories very carefully. They didn't quite match the headlines. This is because you read the story, it said Obama told an associate, like the associate was the source, unnamed source. Obama told an associate that it was time for Biden to go, or worse to that effect. But nowhere did it say that Obama spoke to Biden. Obama hasn't spoken to Biden. That didn't happen. And nowhere does it say that Biden had made a decision to withdraw. That's the expectation. But this had all the look and feel of an orchestrated leak campaign by Pelosi, Schumer, Hakeem Jeffries, Barack Obama, and others, as I mentioned, as we call them, the super friends, that they all decided that Biden had to go. So they started leaking. They started talking among themselves. They came up with a scenario. Kamala Harris is going to be the nominee. They leaked to the press. The press comes out. Biden, you know, on the verge of leaving. But at no point, nowhere in any of these stories does it say that Biden made that decision. And nowhere did it say that anyone spoke to Biden. Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries did, but Pelosi did not. Obama did not. So there's a lot less there than meets the eye. So again, this is Washington. You got to know it. I know the reporters. I was a lobbyist there. I spent a lot of time there. This is an orchestrated pressure campaign to force Biden to step aside. But they haven't actually done it. And the Gang of Eight is still saying, no, we're in the race. So it's an open issue. I'm not saying it won't happen. I'm saying it hasn't happened as of today and may not happen at all. We're just going to have to take this one day at a time. So what are the two possible outcomes? Well, one is Biden toughs it out. They run out the clock. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, I used to watch a Big Five basketball at the Palestra. I grew up in the Philadelphia area, so you had the LaSalle, St. Joseph's, Villanova, Penn, and they would, you know, in college basketball that in those days, there was no shot clock. So in a close game, if LaSalle was beating Villanova, LaSalle would just pass the ball around in the backcourt. You'd pass it from one player to the other, and you know, you'd have to like commit a foul or knock somebody down to get possession of the ball, and that cost you a couple points at the free throw line. But you would just run out the clock. The Biden gang of eight are trying to run out the clock. Now the clock was just pushed back. Maybe we're in overtime. The clock doesn't start ticking on July 21st. It starts ticking on August 1st, but it's still well before August 19th. They're trying to run out the clock one day at a time, get this nomination under their belts and tell everyone else to, go pound the sand. The gang of eight, sorry, the super friends bought some time. We've got 10 more days to do this. They're doing everything possible, again, leaking to the press, historical headlines. But the Biden team hasn't budged. So will they? They might, but they might not. So again, I'm not shy about making predictions, but this is one where I can describe the situation acutely, just did, but the outcome is just up in the air. So that's the best analysis available right now. One group is pushing for him to withdraw, throw him under the bus. Another group says, hang in there. We'll see what happens. So Biden might go all the way, in which case he will almost certainly lose to Trump and JD Vance. What happens if Biden does withdraw? Well, now clearly Kamala Harris becomes the nominee now for president. But I go, hey, wait a second. What about all these other people? Didn't you Democrats just spend 6 months having a primary, having a series of 30 or more primaries in 30 states with millions of votes, and you're just like throwing that away and saying, yeah, we're just going to pick somebody, the heck with all your people. Well, yeah, that is what they're doing. They say Trump's a threat to democracy. Well, the Democrats are just tearing up the Democratic playbook and ignoring all the votes and all the Biden supporters and all the primaries and all the elections, just saying, no, he's done. It's going to be Kamala Harris, but that is what they're doing or trying to do, which raises an interesting question. If Kamala Harris is the nominee for president, who's going to be the vice president? She's got to pick, or not she, but Democratic National Committee, the insiders are going to pick somebody for vice president. Who's that going to be? Well, there's kind of some names floating around. The Republicans are trying to strategize it, but one name that could be the vice president under Kamala Harris, I'm not saying this will happen, I'm saying it could happen, is Barack Obama. And a lot of people say, wait a second, Barack Obama was elected to 2 terms. You can't, there's a term limit. You can't, president can't be elected to a third term under the 22nd Amendment. And so Obama couldn't be, couldn't run on the ticket, et cetera. Here's what the 22nd Amendment actually says. It says no person, so man or woman, whatever, no person may be elected president more than twice. It just says that in so many words. It's very clear. There's more to it, but that opening sentence is unambiguous. Obama has been elected twice, so he cannot be elected a third time. That's clear. But here's the point. It doesn't say you can't be elected vice president. It says you can't be elected president more than twice. It does not say that you cannot be elected vice president, even if you've been elected president twice already. So now you have a scenario where it could be Kamala Harris for president, Barack Obama as vice president, seasoned guy, help her out, whatever. Then they say they win. By the way, that changes all the polling, everything I described to you changes radically because now you have a different ticket. It's Harris Obama under some scenarios. How would that poll? No one's polled it yet, but maybe we'll find out. But now, so let's say they win. Let's say Harris Obama win. And Obama, or sorry, Harris is president for 6 months or years. Yeah, okay, been there, done that. They get her to leave, become ambassador to Paris or someplace with good food. Who knows? Italy maybe. And then at that point, Barack Obama would become the president. And that does not violate the 22nd Amendment because he would not be elected 3 times. He would be an unelected president. He'd have to be elected vice president. No prohibition on that, but he would ascend to the presidency without being elected president. And this has happened before. This happened in at the end of Watergate, where Richard Nixon, he had his vice president, Spiro Agnew. Spiro Agnew resigned because he was in some fraud, tax evasion scandal. Nixon handpicked Gerald Ford to be the vice president. Okay. Then Nixon resigns. Gerald Ford became the president. You now had a vacancy at the vice president level. Gerald Ford picked Nelson Rockefeller. Nelson Rockefeller became the vice president, but you had Gerald Ford and Nelson Rockefeller as president and vice president. Neither one of them was ever elected. Neither one of them was ever elected. They were just handpicked. So that's already happened. And it could happen again if Kamala is elected president and Obama is elected vice president, which does not violate the 22nd Amendment, and then she steps aside on some pretense and he becomes president. Again, he would not be elected president. He would just become president. So I'm not saying that that will happen. I'm saying it could happen. Keep an eye on that. So, as if we didn't have enough confusion, here we are. So, Trump, Vance are on a path to victory, probably an electoral college landslide. What could mess that up? Well, the answer is the Super Friends shoot out the Gang of Eight. Biden steps aside. Kamala steps in. She picks somebody, perhaps powerful, perhaps even Barack Obama's VP, completely skews everything, completely changes the polls, different election, different everything. And then perhaps they could win. On balance, I would say that Trump would still win, but it's a much closer thing than if Biden is the nominee. So we'll learn more in days. We may have Biden withdrawing before you even get to see this video. I think it's going to take another 3 or 4 days, maybe a week, to play out, but they've got until August 1st to get this done. That's the real deadline, because that's when this digital super Zoom, Zoom nominating process begins, digital nominating process. So sometime between today, July 19th, and August 1st, the showdown is going to happen. To one side entrenched, the other side trying to throw Biden under the bus. We'll see what happens. It's very, I would just candidly say it's 50-50. I'm not being a wimp. I'm just saying that you've got a very determined crew with Taco Jill and Hunter Biden and Valerie Biden and the others I mentioned, the Gang of Eight. You've got an equally determined crew with Nancy Pelosi, and everyone in Washington knows don't mess with Nancy Pelosi. So we'll find out what happens probably in the coming days, but that's as much as anyone knows now. Hopefully that's helpful and can help you think about how things are going to play out from here. So have a great weekend. We'll see you soon. Bye.